This is the B-side of the lecture for July 1997, Habakkuk and Modern Times. Habakkuk is here having a dialogue with God. He asks him a question. God answers him in a vision. God tells him to write the vision down. The vision itself is about the Chaldeans who are going to be raised up by God to do a work, a mighty work. But it's God who is going to do it. He's going to give them extensive powers to be able, finally, to take over the entire world. That's what it says when you go to the book of Daniel. You have to go a little outside of the book of Habakkuk to see the whole thing. Then in verse 12, Habakkuk then muses over this. And he is here as a spokesman for Israel, saying to God, all right, he says, now I'm beginning to understand what you mean, that you are God. So he says in verse 12, are you not from everlasting, O Lord, my God, mine Holy One? We shall not die, O Lord. You have ordained them for judgment. In other words, you are the one in charge. You are the one that's bringing up the Chaldeans. Though they are mighty, though they are powerful, though they will exert punishment, in the end we will not die. We will not die. You are going to come to us. Yes, they're being raised up, it says, for judgment. And the end of verse 12, and O mighty God, you have established them for correction. Now, I want to point out something here in the King James Version, and you've got to be careful on this. From verse 12 down to verse 17, the last of the first chapter, the King James Version thought that Habakkuk was referring to the Chaldeans in the plural, and that's true. But you know, in the original Hebrew, it is not in the plural at all. It's in the singular. It's talking about the leader of the Chaldeans. Now, there is not much of a loss of understanding by putting it in the plural, because you see, it's the Chaldeans doing the job. And so the King James Version and some other versions, they just forget all about the Hebrew in the singular and they put it in the plural. But in actual fact, it should be left in the singular, because it's a particular man who is the leader of the Chaldeans that's under discussion here. And remember in the end time that the Apostle Paul singled in on a singular individual called the Wicked One, otherwise known as the Man of Sin or the Son of Perdition. And also in the 13th chapter of the book of Revelation, you find him called the Beast, a singular individual. And also the Antichrist is mentioned as a singular individual. Now, obviously, this singular ruler will have an army that he controls and that he uses. But the emphasis is upon the individual. And for the rest of the chapter here, from chapter verse 12 down to 17, every time you meet with the plural, you just change it to he. It's in the singular. It's talking about this man who will be leading the Chaldeans. And it goes on to say here that that mankind is going to be chastised by this one man. And his power and authority reaches out over the nations to slay them. It's a worldwide affair, just not for Judah, but for the whole world. And here's what happens to Habakkuk, chapter 2, almost like a Jonah. Remember how Jonah, after he prophesied against the Assyrians, he went up on a hillside, sat down, and he said, well, I want to see what will happen. We'll look at chapter 2. Verse 1 belongs with chapter 1 because it's a conclusion of what Habakkuk, as a spokesman for Israel, is saying to God. I will stand on my watch, he says. I'll set me upon a great tower, on a tower. I will watch to see what he, that is God, will say unto me or in me, and what I shall answer when I am reproved. In other words, he tells God, I'm going to wait and see what the complete answer is going to be. Now, in turning over the page in my Bible, we come to a dialogue here that starts with God. And he's going to answer Habakkuk. And he's waiting. Now remember, Habakkuk is on a watchtower, waiting up there for God to answer him. And God is going to answer. Now this is in response to the vision about the Chaldeans that are going to be raised up, which are going to conquer the world. Now in the book of Daniel it says they will conquer the world. In the book of Revelation it says they will conquer the world. This man called the Antichrist is going to conquer the world. And we have to understand it when we put it all together. But look at what God answers to Habakkuk. And this answer starts in verse 2 of chapter 2, and it goes all the way to verse 20. This is God's answer. And he says, "The Lord answered me." Well, there you are, you see. "The Lord answered me, Yahweh answered me, and said, write the vision, make it plain upon tables, that he may run that reads it." You know what the phrase "run that reads it" means? It means to run through the prophecy, run to and fro. In the book of Daniel, right at the end, when the enigmatic prophecies of Daniel were given, it says they're going to be closed and sealed until the end of the time. But at the end of the age, they're going to run to and fro in the prophecy, and the prophecy will be made known. You and I are approaching that time right now when the prophecy of Daniel is going to be made known. But also we're finding here that God says they're going to run in this prophecy too, and it's going to be made known. And when the prophecy is made known, it's going to be a most marvelous thing, as he says in chapter 1 and verse 5. You won't believe it, but it's going to happen. There is going to be a world government come up, is what the whole prophecy is about. And this is what the book of Daniel is talking about. This is what the book of Revelation is talking about. And succinctly, though it's a very small prophecy, this is what the book of Habakkuk is talking about. It's talking about the last 7 years of existence just before the second coming of Christ back to this earth. He says, write the vision, make it plain upon the tables, that is on tablets, that he may run that reads it, that runs right through it to understand it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, you see. They thought it was right on the immediate horizon, but it really wasn't Nebuchadnezzar who was the king being involved here, though they may have thought that. And there were certain feelings, certain tentacles, shall we say, certain aspects of the theme that seemed to fit Nebuchadnezzar pretty well. And he was a type, but he wasn't the end time person. The person is coming in the end time at an appointed time. In fact, it says, but at the end it shall speak. That's when the vision is going to speak, at the very end, the end of the age, just before the kingdom of God emerges on earth. And it will not lie. He's telling the truth. It won't lie. But now notice the next three words. Though it tarry. That is interesting. Though it tarry. Now, it's going to be right on time, but we're going to think it's going to tarry. There's going to be a time when you and I, as human beings, will think everything is right on schedule. But you know, it won't happen exactly on time. You remember what Jesus said himself to the apostles? He said, at the end of the age, things are going to look like so carefully they're going to be happening. And you know, I even have a time schedule myself. It looks pretty clear about the next few years in advance of us when things are going to occur. But I will guarantee you one thing. Whatever time period you set is not going to be accurate. It's going to go on a little longer. It'll always go on a little longer. Now, he went on to say, however, though it tarry, wait for it. Wait. Wait, because it's going to occur. And the next verse is, it will not tarry. You think it will tarry, but it won't tarry. It's going to come right on time. And what time is that? It's the appointed time. And who is the one that appoints the time? It's God who appoints the time. So the very warning here is, this is going to happen. It's going to be marvelous. It's going to be wonderful. It's going to be happening to the dotting of the I and the crossing of the T. It's going to come right on time, but you think it's going to be delayed. And that's exactly what the prophecies of Jesus said. And you know, the earlier apostles, they thought in their generation Jesus would come back. They thought within about 40 years he would be back on earth. And then all of a sudden God then gave a revelation to Peter, to Paul, and the others to show it would be far in the distance. That's exactly how God does things. God is not hiding it from us. He says this vision will take place. It's going to take place right on time, but it's going to be on his time schedule. It's not going to be on yours, and it's not going to be on mine. That's what he's trying to say. But it will occur. Behold, he goes on to say. Well, in fact, he says, it will surely come. It will not tarry. Now, here's God continuing. This is about the vision. Behold, his soul, that is the wicked one that's being mentioned here in the previous chapter, this leader of the Chaldeans, which is lifted up, is not upright in him. But the just shall live by his faith. That was actually quoted by the Apostle Paul to show that it's God's faith that you should go by and not by human faith. That's right here from the book of Habakkuk. Going on, yea, also because he transgresses by wine, that means he is a little, you know, he's very violent, but he has wine in him, and he thinks he's very bold is what it means. He transgresses by wine. He is proud man, neither keeps himself at home. Oh, no, he's out going to rampage throughout all areas not his own. We found that in the previous chapter. And he is going to gather unto him all nations. He's going to heap up all people. No one's going to be left out of his authority. This is talking about world domination. And we find the same thing in the book of Daniel and also in the book of Revelation. And then it says, shall not all these, the nations, take up a parable against him and a taunting proverb against him and say, here comes a proverb. It's a parable. And the proverb and the parable that the nations are going to say against this wicked one, this man of sin, this son of perdition, this Antichrist, this man who is going to control the world, leader of the Chaldeans, there is a proverb and a parable going to be uttered against him. And it's in five divisions. It's a parable of woe against him and also against the world when you get down to it, when you read what it's about here. And each of the five divisions starts out by the word in the English, woe, W-O-E, and there are five of them. You'll see in verse 6, woe to him that increases. But that is not his. How long will it last? You see, it will tarry. How long? The nations are asking this. They don't know, but God knows. God has the appointed time. But in verse 6, it starts out with woe. Look here in, that's number 1. Look at verse 9. Woe to him that covereth. That's number 2. Look at number, let's see here. It is verse 12. Woe to him that builds a town with blood. That's number 3. That's a part of the parable in the proverb. Verse 15. Woe to him that gives his neighbor drink. That means false drink. And will not help him. That is number 4. And then go on down to verse 19. Of this chapter 2, woe to him that says to the wood, awake, to the dumb stone, arise, in idolatry. It's in 5 divisions, and every single one of them is a woe. It's a parable, and it's a proverb, that the nations themselves are going to say against the situation that this man will introduce. He's going to introduce idolatry into the world, though it will not look like idolatry. He's going to introduce problems into the world, which you can have to read there. They're all woes, and you can read them. But the thing is, the nations themselves are going to taunt this individual through God, and they're going to understand, finally, that it is God who is doing this marvelous work. But the man is going to be doing a judgment against the entire world. That's the whole thing that we have to recognize. And it's for an appointed time. And it's a time when people are going to say, how long is this going to happen? Now, this is what we find here in these woes, 5 of them. You know, when you look at the prophecies of Isaiah, if you look at Isaiah starting in chapter 5 and verse 25, it starts out with a prophecy there, and then going on through chapter 9, 5 times, which I will not give you, but 5 times it is mentioned. You go on in Amos chapter 4 and verse 6, 5 times it is given there. And the 6th time is, behold, people, prepare to meet your God. In the prophecies of Leviticus to ancient Israel, where they were shown that if they go contrary to God, there are going to be 5 divisions of woes. 7-fold problems are going to come upon them 5 different times. There's also a positive side to this 5-fold way of God doing things. The first 5 books of the Bible are 5, the Pentateuch, giving the law of God. And you know the law of the New Testament? The first 5 books of the New Testament, the 4 Gospels and the book of Acts, that's 5. How many divisions do we find the Psalms in? 150 Psalms? 5 divisions. And here we have a parable. Here we have a proverb, and there are 5 woes. 5 woes to this. And you can read them where it shows, really, corruption in the earth extremely, and that this man who's the leader of the Chaldeans is supposed to be bringing in peace and security and all of that as far as the people of the world are told, but really what happens is he's bringing in corruption. Now, this is a great mystery that's going to occur at the end of the age, and it says the prophecy should be written down, and people then can run toward it or through it, and you will be able to understand it at that time. All right, now that ends the prophecy. And what was the response of Habakkuk? He then gives us an operatic type of a psalm set to music, in which he responds to God. This psalm is normally to be read in the temple to God's people. And here's what it says. It's a prayer of Habakkuk, the prophet. It's upon Shigionoth, which means it's a turbulent type of a psalm with much crescendo in it as you get near the end, something like that. And it says this, O Lord, this is what Habakkuk says, I have heard your speech, and I was afraid. O Lord, revive your work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make known in wrath, but remember mercy. Now that's interesting. That's how he starts out. In the middle of a set period of time, in the very middle of that period, we want you to remember us. We want you to show mercy. It's going to be a time of wrath, which we have just heard about. But in the midst of this period, would you please send us mercy? That's what he says. That's what he asked for. Now, that's the song. That's the opera that's being shown here. That's the first thing Habakkuk is wanting to get across to the people that are listening and are hearing this psalm. He says, in the midst of the years, in the middle of a period of time. Now, God is very interested in this period of time. He calls it the time of the end. Remember in chapter 2? He also said it will not tarry. It's going to come right on time. But you're going to think it's going to tarry. And you're going to keep saying like Habakkuk did, how long, O Lord, are you going to put up with this? How long? How long? So chronology figures into it. But people are not at the time are going to wonder, is God going to come and rescue us or is he not? And here's Habakkuk, who is writing under inspiration of God, in the middle of a set period of time, he's asking for mercy. Mercy upon his people, upon the people that to whom he is talking, the righteous people of Israel. It's rather interesting, isn't it, that in the book of Daniel, we have at the end of the age, both in the 70 weeks prophecy and in chapter 8 and also in chapter 7, we have a period of time of 7 years. And that period of time, isn't it interesting, is divided in half, in the middle of which certain things happen. 3.5 years on one side, 3.5 years on the other side. When you go to the book of Revelation, you also read the same thing. You read about 1,260 days or 42 months. That's another 1,260 days. Or you read about a time and times, plural, and a half a time, which means a 3-year period, 3.5 year period. But a 3.5 year period on one side and a 3.5 year period on the other gives a period of 7 years altogether. The end time, that period of time, which the 70 weeks prophecy of the book of Daniel talks about, and by the way, that is the king of prophetical, chronological prophecies of the Bible. You find that that 7 years is the very period of time at the end. And here is Habakkuk. He doesn't say 7 years. That's given in other prophecies. But he's asking for help from God and mercy from God for God's people in the middle of the time period. Right in the middle. Show us mercy. Verse 3, God came down from Teman. And the Holy One from Mount Paran. That means just like when he was on Mount Sinai with Moses, he's going to come down to help his people with power and authority. Then it says Selah. That's a psalm phrase, which means lift up the baton. Lift up the baton. That means pause. Think on what we've been saying. And here is what happens. When this occurs in the middle of this period of time, his glory covers the heavens. The earth was full of his praise. And his brightness was as the light, like the sun shining in its strength. And he had horns coming out of his hand. And there was the hiding of his power. That means he's coming forth with splendor. Before him went the pestilence, the burning coals went forth his feet. He stood and measured the earth at this time. He beheld and drove asunder the nations. The everlasting mountains were scattered. The perpetual hills did bow. His ways are everlasting. I saw the tents of Cushan, it says, in affliction. Cushan, the first Cush, the son of Ham, back there in the time of Noah, was the first one to settle Mesopotamia. It was called the ancient Kassite area. You'll find it in the cuneiform tablets, Kassite. The first Cush was there in Mesopotamia between the river Tigris and the river Euphrates. From that area, they moved out. Half of them went into Africa and became the Ethiopians, the Cushites in the south. Half went east into India, and they became the Cushites in the east. And even today, you remember, even geography, the Hindu Kush Mountains, part of the Himalaya chain. These were dark people by complexion and things like that, but they were the first ones to establish themselves in Babylon, in the area there. And Nimrod himself was from Ham, as you recall. They were the first world despots. Now, these people of Cushan are being discussed here. They are the ancient Chaldeans. Now, the ancient Chaldeans of going back to the time of Noah are the ones who gave their names to the geography. The Chaldeans that were there in the time of Nebuchadnezzar were different. But at the same time, it was started by these Cushite people there in Mesopotamia. This is the original name for Mesopotamia, clearly. So there is coming a Babylon in the future. Do you know that Babylon is going to be revived, I should say? Now, we're having trouble right now. It seems like that Saddam is still in power over there, and it's in a backward area at the present. Listen, I've been saying for a long time, and it's not I saying it. It's God. There's going to be a revival of the city of Babylon. It's going to come up, and it's going to be in Mesopotamia, and it's going to be powerful in the next few years ahead of us. That's the reason I can say in the next 5 years, we can't expect these prophecies to take place, because the city of Babylon has not been raised up yet. The area of the Cushan, that is the Kassites in ancient Mesopotamia, have not seen come back to glory yet. There's still happenings in the Middle East with Israel that have to take place yet, and Egypt, and things like that, but the stage is being set. The stage is being set for this 7-year period at the end of the age that Habakkuk is talking about. And it's an appointed time. And it's not going to tarry beyond the time that God has scheduled it, though we may think it will. It's not going to tarry. It's going to happen exactly as God says. He says, I saw the tents of Cushan, the land of Midian. That's in the same area. And the Lord was displeased against the rivers, Tigris and Euphrates, and anger against the rivers, the wrath against the seas. And it goes on through the rest of this here, how that God is going to destroy the land of the Chaldeans, the land of Babylon, the land of this man who then becomes the man of sin, the son of perdition, or the beast of the book of Revelation. When you look at all of this here, it shows that God in the end is going to secure peace and prosperity. But it's going to come at a time of great trouble just before that peace can arrive. It goes on to say in verse 15, you did walk through the sea with your horses, through the heap of great waters. When I heard, my belly trembled at what the Chaldeans were doing, and what God is going to do as a result of these things. It says, it's a day of trouble. And he's coming up unto the people, this Antichrist. He's going to invade them, but at the same time, he is going to be put down. And who is going to have the greatest strength? It says in verse 19, the Lord God is my strength. He will make my feet like hinds' feet. He will make me to walk upon the high places. Here is Habakkuk as a spokesman for Israel, saying that Israel, in the end, will secure peace. Yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. And then it says at the end of verse 19, to the chief singer on my stringed instruments. The opera is over with God triumphing. All of this has to do with the 7 years at the end of the age, which we are fast approaching. What we need to do is to put the vision down into its proper context. We need to look at the book of Daniel. Find out there about the periods of time when the man of sin or otherwise known as the Wicked One, is going to emerge on the scene. And we're going to see this seven-year period with, in the middle of it, God's people are going to be helped. In actual fact, when you go to Zephaniah in the next book, and next month I'm going to be talking about that, you will find that God's people are going to be saved in this very period of time, and in the half period where people are going to be in destruction, or the under destruction, and powerful things happening, like Habakkuk says, Zephaniah says, God's people can be saved. I will give that next month. And I'll tell you, that is very interesting, because these two prophets here are twin prophets. They actually belong together. And when you put both of the prophecies together, you will begin to understand things as never before. Now, lots of this information that you find in here is rather obtuse when you read it at first. It's written in language which was very familiar to Habakkuk. But it's language, though we have it in English and we can understand it, it's written in language and even in a Hebrew idiom that was known by those people back at those days. What we have to do is to analyze carefully what it's like, and we can come to an understanding of it pretty clearly. But you know, it's up to God to reveal these things to us, isn't it? He is the one who takes away the scales of our eyes and the plugs out of our ears. We're coming into the period of time right now where we can begin to run through these prophecies, as it says here. And we will begin to see them happen, and they're going to be as certain as the dotting of an I and the crossing of the T. God has put these things down as a decree, as commandments, as a method of prophecy for us today, which we at the end time will even understand more and more. And I'll tell you, Ernest Martin will know more about this prophecy 5 years from now than I do right now. And so will you. But we're coming into the time where it's not going to be delayed. God says, I will not tarry. Write this vision on tablets. Give it to the people of Israel. Give it to the people of the world. It's going to be a marvelous thing that's going to happen. It's going to be something you won't believe, but it will occur. It's going to occur exactly as I say. And after it occurs, you're going to say with the psalmist here, with Habakkuk, that yes, I will rejoice in the Lord. I will have joy in the God of my salvation. This concludes the B-side of the lecture for July 1997, Habakkuk in Modern Times.